Hi everyone, this is Born with an Identity Crisis. My name is Nora and I'm your host. And this episode will be a bit different. And our guest today is Ellen.
I'm Ellen and I study environment and sustainable development with economics. And yeah, I'm Welsh.
Nice. So you brought something along. Tell us in Welsh, what did you choose for today's episode?
Well, you asked for a joke or a tongue twister, and Welsh jokes are really bad. So I thought I'd bring a tongue twister, which is actually one of the, maybe the fourth longest place names in the world. So it goes like this. And that was a tourist scheme by the town of Llanfair in Anglesey to raise awareness.
Oh, so it's not even the real name of the town?
No, but it's really old as well, because my grandfather comes from and is born Anglesey, and back in the day you'd be able to have like a ticket to wave people off the platforms. Mm-hmm. And the everywhere else they costed like 1p, but in Llanfair apparently it costed 3p because of the amount of paper it took to produce the ticket. So that it's really old.
Hilarious. So yeah, how, as you can hear, Ellen is Welsh, born and raised in Wales, and what makes Ellen a bit special is the fact that she was born and raised in a Welsh household and went to Welsh school, and well, I mean, you're more Welsh than one can be Welsh, I feel like. But ever since, you know, moving to London, you've had to encounter, you know, different things, around your identity. And first, I just want to start off with how was it to grow up in Wales and in your Welsh community?
I'd say my community was really strong. So I grew up in a village of around 1,000 people, and uniquely it had a Welsh language chapel. And for the Welsh language, it wouldn't have survived without chapel. It doesn't matter if you're religious or not, it's somewhere you just go to socialise within the Welsh language. So I'd go to Sunday school on Sundays, obviously. And so we'd perform, we'd recite poetry, we'd have little dramas. So that aspect of the community was really strong. But that kind of goes against kind of the general context of where I come from. So I come from a county called Rhondda Cynon Taf, and it's actually one of the least Welsh-speaking counties in Wales. So only around 10% of us speak Welsh, and I'd say the common usage is even lower. So I went to a Welsh language school. The school which I went to only around 5% of us came from Welsh language backgrounds, and most people would come to school, and that would be when they were three, that would be their first encounter with the Welsh language. So I guess that kind of makes it's a bit awkward growing up, because the social language is English, but you feel like you're meant to speak Welsh. And yeah, I remember the first time, you'd socialise in Welsh, in the Welsh school, in primary school, because that was enforced. But then, if you went to parties or saw friends outside of school, you'd speak English. And I remember feeling really, year five or six, feeling guilty that I was speaking English, because, you know, we were taught at school you had to speak Welsh, siarad eich Gymraeg, siarad eich Gymraeg. And then, obviously, I came from a Welsh-speaking family, and I felt this moral obligation to uphold the Welsh language. But, like, I was just a kid, so, like, I remember feeling guilty speaking English outside of school with my Welsh-speaking friends.
I mean, I can understand, like, that sounds also strange to me when you're, you know, socialising with your friends in your school, and then you would think you would just continue with the same language outside of school. But was it the fact that they weren't necessarily, like, Welsh speakers in home, and that's why they just decided to speak English with you, or there just wasn't any particular reason?
I'd say there's probably two reasons. Obviously, if English is your first language at home, then that's the language you feel most comfortable in. And also, you kind of associate the Welsh language with school. Mm-hmm. And obviously, children don't like school.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's also interesting, because there are a lot of people, right, they learn a second or third language in school. And then when you ask them, oh, do you speak it? Or are you, you know, can you... have a conversation, they'll mostly say no, even though they learned it for 5 years. And I think it's mainly because they associate it with school and being forced to do it. And that sounds kind of similar here.
Yeah, I'd say it's a bit different because obviously the people I went to school with were fluent in Welsh. It's just, I don't know, it becomes more about which language you can feel yourself in.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I mean, it's something we've also talked in another episode of the fact if you don't speak a language completely fluently, you'll feel, you know, not included and you'll feel shy to speak up. And if that's not necessarily your personality, that can be hard. And I think I always have this kind of thought in my head, which you probably have as well, is that you meet some friends and, you know, you build a relationship, but they'll always know one side of you. They'll always, you know you in either one language or the other, but they'll not know the person that you are in the other languages. And for me personally, I feel like, you know, we're talking in English and that's completely fine. And a lot of my personality and identity, I can convey that in that language, but it still feels like there are parts of me that are missing, right? Because we're not talking in the other languages I know. And I think that must probably be the same for you if you don't speak Welsh to certain people.
Yeah, it's weird because nowadays I mainly speak Welsh with my family. So then you're a different person with your family compared to your friends. So I have no idea if I socialised in Welsh, then who would I be? I mean, I have a sense of who that is because I do have Welsh-speaking friends, but less so than my English-speaking. Well, obviously, it's complicated because everyone, all of my friends from home can speak Welsh, but we socialise in English.
Mm.
But yeah, I'd say I'm a bit more bullish in Welsh. Welsh is an easy language to speak quickly in, whereas English is not, which is why I tend to mumble in English. And English is just, it's a more polite language. It's less colourful. It's, yeah.
Interesting that you say polite, because what I'm missing so much in the English word version or language is a polite version of you. You know how we have it in French and in German, like Sie and
vous, yeah.
And we don't have that in English. And I hate that so much. For me, English feels so unpolite. It feels so, like, friendly and, like, casual. And that's what I really don't like about the language.
But there's something to me about English which stops you from, I don't know, just, oh, it's hard to express, really.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't have as much fire in it because it's a much more vowely language than, say, Welsh, where you have more consonants, more guttural sounds.
Yeah. I mean, you told us a bit how it was in school, but how did that make you feel when most of your friends in your area wouldn't speak Welsh? Did you feel on the outside, or you felt conflicted, or how did that necessarily make you feel growing up in that area?
It wasn't so much a problem after that. I remember because when we went to secondary school, people stopped speaking Welsh in school as well.
Oh, really?
Because it was more of a, oh, we're in big school now kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But you still had, like, classes in Welsh.
Yeah. So then it was fine. I think you kind of come to realise that everyone has, like, a common language between them, and you kind of figure out what's your common language with different people.
Yeah.
If you're Welsh, if you came from a Welsh-speaking background in my school, you were always pushed to become part of the choir, you know, do these competitions and that. So people always knew you were from a Welsh-speaking background. I suppose it's fine. You just have to be sensitive not to make a big thing out of it, because mm-hmm. what you don't want is for people to sense that you feel superior, because you just have to be very careful. And that's why I think where I come from in the South, I might say Shomai, which is like a Welsh greeting, and then that's kind of a common one that everyone knows, but I don't overly project that I can speak Welsh, because what you don't want is that to convey that someone is less Welsh because they can't speak Welsh, because that's completely not true.
Because I can imagine, you know, hearing from someone who doesn't necessarily speak Welsh, that they might have, like, a completely different perception of what it means to be Welsh, and perhaps some of them feel guilty and some of them perhaps not, because it really isn't necessarily their fault. If you're around the border to England, then you'll be, you know, more towards the English languages, and then a lot of Welsh speakers as well, you know, Welsh communities were, as you've mentioned before, like,
they were basically stopped from passing basically the Welsh language was banned by the Victorians after some social uprising. Socially, I think it was better economically if English was your first language, and it was the English language was seen as a way of getting a good education and social mobility. So then people themselves stopped, kind of suppressed the Welsh language as well. So it was a two-way thing. It was the government, but then people themselves viewing bilingualism as not a way to become intelligent or to progress in society.
That's so interesting, because it's not the only case. Like, there's so many people out there who think it's just easier if, you know, the children or if their family only speak one language and integrate themselves well into a culture. But multiple studies have shown that people who speak multiple languages, they have so many benefits from that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting in terms of, so basically Wales, in economically, you have agricultural regions, and then you had, well, used to have industrialized regions, so the coal mines of the valleys. And I think when you had like a hierarchical business structure, that's when those were the places that people stopped passing down. But if you were your own boss, so my, on the other side, so basically my half of my family come from coal mining regions and the other half come from rural Wales. So on that half, so my great-grandfather was a farmer and the other one was a baker. So if you were your own boss, then you'd speak Welsh and you'd feel no kind of societal pressure to stop passing down the language, because there wasn't such a hierarchy in the same way.
Right, so you told us a bit how already the change from primary school to secondary school. I was wondering, how was it for you to move to London?
Coming to London, I didn't expect to miss the language, but I think that's what I missed the most. More so than being homesick, it was missing the feeling of being surrounded by Welsh, because obviously up to that point, you know, all my schooling life was in Welsh. My family obviously speak Welsh, so I think missing that kind of familiarity, and for me Welsh was a very comforting language. And then obviously when you move to university, you get pulled out of your support system that you've built over, what, 18 years.
Yeah.
And then that exacerbated, coupled with the fact that Welsh no longer existed in my life. I suppose I felt that hard.
Did you have the same feeling moving to London, like seeking out Welsh groups or Welsh societies? Or
I joined a Welsh chapel, just because it was just nice to sing in Welsh and to hear someone, I'm not religious even, it was just nice to hear someone preach at me in Welsh, you know, and especially because, yeah, the Welsh language, when it's really formal and really intricate, it's just beautiful.
I think I have something similar. I'm not really religious as well, but I love going to church in Denmark, just hearing the songs sing in Danish. How has it been for you to meet fellow Welsh people here at LSE or in general in London?
There aren't many Welsh people in LSE at all. I don't know why, compared to other universities. If you go to Exeter, there's like billions of them. I've met a couple of Welsh people, but not Welsh speakers.
Mm.
And the Welsh speakers I've met, it's weird because you kind of have to figure out which language they feel most comfortable in.
Yeah.
You don't want to communicate. I don't know, maybe I overcomplicate things, but because of my context, you know, coming from a non-Welsh speaking area, I've always been quite sensitive not to
impose.
That's the right word. You don't want to force someone to speak in a language that they don't feel themselves in. So I haven't got to know people I know who do speak Welsh and are fluent in Welsh, because that's how they did their A-levels in Welsh. I haven't had enough time to get to know what's the language of their heart.
Mm.
And then there's the added complication, if there's a group of you and one people doesn't speak Welsh, then no one speaks Welsh, which
of
is
course.
How it should be, because you shouldn't exclude people because of language.
Yeah, but no, I completely understand. It makes it harder to form a relationship, and as you said, you don't want to somehow make them feel uncomfortable or guilty for the fact that they don't speak Welsh as fluent as you, perhaps. I completely understand that sense of kind of being like in between, right?
Yeah, definitely, especially when you don't know them. But again, maybe if I came from West Wales and North Wales, then my assumption would be, or my instinct would be, just to speak Welsh regardless.
Yeah, so side note, we actually live in the same hall and we're kind of neighbors, to say the least. And that's how I met Ellen. And we've talked about the fact of, you know, after university, what do you want to do and where do you want to go? And I've always said that I have absolutely no clue where I'm going to end up. But you're quite clear on wanting to go back to Wales.
Yeah, which is weird because when I, yeah, after I'd done my A-levels, I thought that was bye-bye Wales forever. Because I just wanted to get out and, I don't know, explore something, a place that was bigger than 3 million people. So yeah, I thought I was going, I thought my career would be really important to me. I thought I'd go to London and then go to Europe. But since returning back home over summer, basically we have this thing, a little bit of a digression, but we have this thing, this festival called the Eisteddfod in Wales. So that's kind of the crowning jewel of Welsh culture. It's the biggest cultural festival in Europe and everyone huddles together in the fields. We sing, we dance. It's a competition of poetry. Yeah, with weird pagan origins. It's brilliant. It's weird, but it's brilliant. And that actually came to my hometown, Pontypridd, which was, I was a bit tentative about because obviously Pontypridd isn't a predominantly Welsh-speaking place. It was just so nice hearing, seeing the town start to assert some cultural confidence, you know, and a claim to the Welsh language because the Welsh language belongs to us all, even if you don't speak it. So I think something clicked there in terms of me wanting to be a part of that. So yeah, after summer, when I really enjoyed being back home, I think, yeah, it kind of clicked the, no, I do want to come home to Wales permanently.
And as you've said to me before, it's hard to maintain the Welsh language outside of Wales. Even in London, you know, in a huge city where it's so international, and I can imagine there's Welsh communities and Welsh chapels in London, but yeah, still, yeah. It's not the same, right?
I'd say in London you can, because I think you have around the population of Cardiff of Welsh people in London itself. So I think there's enough people, especially with the Welsh language church, you know, there's like 4 or 5 Welsh language chapels. For me, it's more like, what happens then?
Mm.
So say I have kids and I raise them in London, yeah, while speaking. But what happens then? Is the Welsh language going to carry on? I don't think so. Right. So it's more like that, which seems silly, but that's kind of the psychology we have to deal with in terms of thinking about the viability of the language long term.
Yeah, it's really cool just to see how important that is to you. I know a couple of people who are part of minority groups in different countries, and they themselves say how hard it is to maintain their language outside of their community and how it doesn't feel the same. As you say, at some point, if you live here and perhaps your kids are going to speak fluently Welsh, what about the next generation? You know, are they going to marry someone who's not Welsh speaker, and then they'll have to decide like what language is the priority, and then they might move somewhere else as well. And that's, I guess that's one of the quite hard things about globalization.
Yeah, it works against minority languages and small countries, because to keep minority languages alive, you need people to stay together in one place. Whereas globalization is the opposite of that. Globalization is very career-oriented, I think, and not so much about society and community and intergenerational roots. So I guess that's why I'm trying to reverse that trend, you know, by going back to where I came from. I'm guessing, importantly in terms of my context, is on my dad's side, my grandparents were non-Welsh speaking. My grandmother pretty much had it set that she wanted her kids to go to a Welsh language school because she remembered hearing it from her grandmother, and it was just in her blood that she wanted it to be carried on or to be rebirthed into the family. But interestingly, my grandmother and my grandfather actually disagreed,
mm-hmm,
about sending my dad to a Welsh language school because of that perception of that bilingualism doesn't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, my grandmother was stubborn. And she fought. And I'm pretty much sure she would have divorced my grandfather over sending my dad to a Welsh language school. So I guess that's kind of you know, that's a difficult decision to make in terms of being the first. And especially because my dad was a child of the 70s, and that was really the first generation of children in Wales to be given a Welsh language education in, what, 200 years?
That's crazy.
So, yeah, I guess that's where the, you know, you might think I'm, I don't know, people listen to this might think I'm a nutter being so passionate about the Welsh language. But it's just the probability of my dad being sent to Welsh language school from Kids of the Valleys. And then meeting my mum, whose family were always Welsh speaking, and then being able to raise her kids, you know, it made my grandmother's life, really.
Right, we're going to go a bit in a different route, a bit, perhaps a bit political. How is it for you when you're interacting with English people or people who perceive themselves as, you know, being British, and then being confronted with you and not necessarily understanding the fact why Welsh is so important to you?
I'd say interactions have been mixed. I used to work as a steward in Old Streets, and I had a couple of very interesting conversations with men in their 70s about the Welsh language. In terms of kind of the general picture, so my grandmother, I'm not sure if I should say this, but she used to read the Telegraph, and they were anti-Welsh, and I think generally the English press are very anti-Welsh. They see it as annoying. They don't understand the importance, the cultural importance of it. More generally, I think I've met some people and I've been shocked as to how little they know in terms of the viability of Welsh. You know, the Eisteddfod is the largest, like I said, the largest political cultural festival in Europe. And they just think it's a language that some farmers speak, you know, right at the edge of the Atlantic. Yeah. And also the history and the role of the British state, the English state, in suppressing it. It's really hard for people who are monolingual to understand the importance of bilingualism and how different identities are matched. And it's also hard to convey, because if you're having a conversation with someone who's from England about the Welsh language and how important it is to your identity, then that's awkward because you are asserting yourself as different to them. If I'm trying to assert my identity as separate from England, then that's awkward.
Also, just the fact of, you know, Wales of itself as a country, it's interesting how its perception around the world, I mean, it depends from where you're from. As a European, I always knew Wales was its own country. I see Scotland as its own country.
Right.
But many people don't see that.
Oh, the French are terrible.
They see it as a region of Britain, right? And and that must be also kind of hard to having to deal with that.
It's weird because in a legal sense, I don't know, how do you define a country?
Good question.
You know, I was having this conversation with one person who's part of the Hiking Society, and he was like, oh, is Wales a country? And it's like, no. Because of the legal basis of what makes a country. But then that's only one definition, right? I suppose if you feel like a different people, and ethnically we're different in terms of, we're Celts, you know, we're not Anglo-Saxons, in terms of socioeconomics, it's a different culture. It, politically, it's different. It's had, you know, Wales has had a Labour in charge since the 1920s. It's the most Welsh Labour is the most successful or the longest running political party in the world in terms of being in power, and that's different to England. I suppose for me it's sad because of those. Also humour, I feel a bit boisterous when I use the same humour in English that I'd employ speaking English with my Ponty friends, you know, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, that doesn't quite sit into the context. But yeah, also Welsh, Wales in comparison to Scotland and Ireland projects itself quite poorly for different reasons. I think one is most nationalism in Wales happens through the Welsh language, and obviously no one around the world speaks Welsh,
no,
except for Patagonia, whereas in Ireland and Scotland nationalism happens through the medium of English, right?
Yeah.
So that's easy to project. The Welsh nationalism is very not nationalism, it's more of I don't know, nationalism, I don't like that word.
No, me either.
I think I prefer the Welsh word, which is gwladgarwch, which literally means love of country.
Mm.
I think gwladgarwch only happens within, predominantly happens within the Welsh language, which obviously no one understands.
When I ask you about identity crisis, perhaps not you as a person, but like, what do you, how do you associate that to Wales?
I suppose what makes this episode a bit different from your previous episodes is I don't have an identity crisis because I'm Welsh speaking in Wales, you know, there's not much to it. But I suppose what makes it interesting is it's a minority language in a country which is viewed as synonymous to England, right? Yeah, that's where the identity crisis comes in. And historically, Wales has had an identity crisis. There were bouts of protests in the 1920s, 1960s. A woman in my chapel got arrested for painting signs and stuff like that. And I guess then, what does the future look like? You know, are we going to have a Welsh language? You know, when I'm old, you know, how is the Welsh language going to play? Because the last census recorded the lowest percentage of Welsh speakers ever.
How many?
17%.
And as you say, in result of globalization and different things such as opportunity, education, jobs, the number will probably be even lower. And if, I mean, you as an individual, you can do everything you can, but if nothing changes on a collective and on a national basis, what, as you say, what's the future?
Yeah, that's been hard, especially, so the past year hasn't been great for Welsh culture. The National Theatre of Wales has closed. Mm. The Welsh National Opera has cut, you know. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out long term. It's kind of like supporting a football team that isn't doing very well, you know, or supporting Manchester United. Like, I know because my dad supports Manchester United and I'm like, sometimes, why do you do this to yourself,
yeah,
Dad?
No,
like,
I get that.
But you can't let go, you know, you love it. Like, when your team does well, you saw, but then you really feel it when it doesn't. But also, you wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah, it's like, I think with languages and you need a community and I don't know, it's like kind of ecosystems. You can't just plant a tree in the middle of nowhere and expect it to thrive, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same with people and language, you know? You can't just have a couple of odd people there in London yapping in Welsh.
And as you say, like, ecosystem, you need schools and culture and religion and other institutions that make it possible for it to maintain and to thrive.
Which schools, so you could argue that that's why it's been stable. That's why it's different to Irish and Scottish Gaelic. Because it's become, you know, I did my A-levels in Welsh, and once you have a degree of formality within the language, then it has institutional status.
Yeah.
You know, all of the first ministers have been fluent in Welsh. You know, that means something. So it's not critical.
No.
But it just needs people to put effort, and it needs more service jobs. We need to create an environment where people can return to Wales and work in the service sector, for example. You know, I mean, I'm happy because, you know, I kind of like agriculture anyway. So it's fine for me because it kind of aligns with the environment and what I'm interested in. But you can't expect everyone to be farmers, you know?
No. I find it really fascinating to hear because Wales is, you know, it's quite a unique case. I mean, one could say similar to Scotland or Ireland, but compared to what I know and what I grew up with, it is quite unique, and I think it's quite unique for many people out there. And it was great to hear from you and to tell us a bit more about how it is for you and what your perception of what it means to be Welsh and growing up with the Welsh language and how that has formed your identity. And as you mentioned, a bit different episode this time, but I thought it'd just be refreshing to hear, you know, something different. And I think that's what it is. The title is called Born with an Identity Crisis, but we're not all born necessarily with it, and it comes through time. And as you said, your identity crisis is more of the crisis of not knowing what the future will be.
Yeah, not knowing where my identity will be.
Mm.
But yeah, it makes it all the more fun. Thanks for having me.
Of course, and thank you to everyone for listening, and hope you have a great day.